Welcome to the space show, Sarah.
Thank you.
What have we got here in front of us now?
Okay, this is the entrance to the exhibition, and we have two objects here. One is a telescope, which we've loaned from the Melbourne Museum, and the other object is an artwork by a French artist, Mathieu Briand, which is a sculpture of the moon. It's a flat disc which slowly moves around, and it has a tiny camera trained onto it, and the camera projects a live feed onto a screen which you can see at the entrance of the exhibition. And what we wanted to do by bringing these two objects together really is to set up, I suppose, the breadth of the work that the exhibition brings together. So we have some contemporary art and we have a historical archival object which we've loaned from the museum. And the exhibition really brings together those different types of objects. We also have, a film which sits with these two objects, and that is Georges Méliès' Trip to the Moon.
Georges Méliès being an early French filmmaker.
And the exhibition is structured historically as a chronological narrative. And Georges Méliès was one of the first filmmakers, and he was also one of the first science fiction filmmakers. So his work really looks at space travel, which is the theme of our exhibition.
And this brass object then in front of us?
Yes, this is an altitude and azimuth instrument. As I said, we have loaned this from the Melbourne Museum. It was used to observe the transit of Venus in 1874 by a Melbourne Observatory assistant astronomer, Edward White, at the Melbourne Observatory. And we have worked quite closely with the Melbourne Observatory on a number of exhibits in this show. So we wanted to sort of flag this up as part of the Australian story in the exploration of space.
And the transit of Venus, of course, is quite a rare event.
Yes, it's a very rare event, and I suppose it's an event that has its own little story in the sort of European discovery of Australia. And as we get further into the exhibition, that we tell that story.
Yes, and Captain Cook.
Yes.
And the measurement of the size of the Earth.
Yeah.
Rocket science. The gallery now called Rocket Science.
Yes, so the first part of the exhibition moving through is called Rocket Science, and Rocket Science focuses on early cinema. We have films by Fritz Lang, we have films by Thomas Edison, we have an amazing Russian constructivist film, Alita, which has a not-so-interesting plot but incredibly interesting set design and costumes. We have Coco the Clown. We've brought together the diversity of the different ways that early filmmakers were looking at space exploration. It's really interesting looking at these today in terms of what they got right and what they imagined. There tends to be less of an understanding of the atmosphere in space and what people might need to wear to protect themselves. But in terms of, I suppose, rocket science or early rocketry, there was, you know, they're quite spot on, and there was a lot of collaboration between scientists and rocket designers and filmmakers in those early days.
And what does Coco the Clown have to do with space? You tell me.
He takes a trip to space. As you can see, floating up into space. I suppose we wanted to bring together, you know, the humorous way that filmmakers looked at it, and then there's more serious films like Fritz Lang's Woman in the Moon, and then very fantastical ones like Himmelskimmet, which is a Danish film, or as I mentioned before, Alita, Queen of Mars, which is a love story set in Mars and on Earth, but it's very fantastical.
And I noticed the spaceship he took off and looked like a car, but without wheels, it had legs instead. That's a technology that's not yet been mastered.
There's a lot of wild technology depicted in these films, but I think we also wanted to look at how that idea of sort of dreaming up technology or dreaming science was something that film played a very important role in.
And over here we've got some people in looks like a mix of Egyptian and futuristic.
Yes,
sort
no,
of.
This is Alita, Queen of Mars, which was a film made in 1924 in Russia. It's based on a novel by Alexei Tolstoy, and it has become very rightly famous for its costumes. As you mentioned, these Russian constructivist costumes, which were designed by Alexandra Extra. And they're just incredible, like the sort of detail that they've gone into for the headgear, for these amazing skirts. And yes, it looks slightly Roman, it looks Russian, it's all sorts of different things melded together, but it's an incredibly beautiful film, and the set is amazing.
It made in 1924.
Yep.
Yeah, where are we now, Sarah?
Okay, so we have a room that we've built inside the rocket science section, which we have on display a series of early magic lantern slides, along with a magic lantern projector and a short animation we have made of the magic lantern slides. And the magic lantern slides all depict different astronomical phenomena. They are held in the Melbourne Museum collection, and they're incredibly beautiful prototype cinema objects. These were used as really as popular entertainment more than as sort of hard science. They would be presented as part of a sort of entertainment lecture in a community hall. There would be a projectionist putting these slides through the magic lantern projector, and then there would be somebody giving a lecture about the universe. And we like their connection between, I suppose, the popular entertainment, the early role that magic lantern slides play in the development of cinema, and the way that there was obviously this fascination in space and space exploration at this early time.
I notice the one right in front of us here shows how last week's eclipse happened.
Yes, they show a whole different range of different events in beautiful sort of pastel colours that really bring those phenomena to light. It was interesting working with the curators at ScienceWorks on these, because there's, you know, some of these events or phenomena are now understood in a very different way, but some of them have also proved to be right later in research.
That must have stimulated a great deal of interest in astronomy at the time.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And this is a section about the transit of Venus and the role of the Melbourne Observatory in looking at the transit of Venus, but also the photoheliograph, which is an instrument used for looking at the transit of Venus, which is held at the Melbourne Observatory in the Botanic Gardens. Unfortunately, we couldn't bring the whole photoheliograph to the exhibition. It's too precious and too difficult to move. But what we have got on display is a component of that, which we have borrowed from the Victorian Astronomical Society and through our work with Barry Clark, who has been incredibly generous in his support, both in terms of his knowledge but also in terms of lending us items from his collection. We also have a short animation that's been made out of the photos that were taken by the photoheliograph of the transit of Venus in 1882. Sorry, looking down there, but it's up there. In 1882. We also have the photos that were taken from the photoheliograph as well.
Oh, wow. Race for Space.
Yes.
What's this about?
Okay. This section, Race for Space, as I said, the exhibition is organised chronologically. So the Race for Space focuses on the race for space that the Soviet Union or the Russians and the Americans fought against each other for supremacy in space. We've organised the exhibition in this section of the exhibition into the Americans on one side and the Russians on the other, really setting up that battle. And we've included in this section a mixture of archival footage, feature films, documentaries, and objects that relate to that period in time. I think what's quite interesting about it is that in Australia we really got the American story about their supremacy in that race, but in many ways the Russians, as you probably know all about, their science was very advanced. They achieved a lot of things that the Americans didn't achieve, and they did it first. So we've really sort of tried to play that out a little bit, and we have some amazing footage of Yuri Gagarin, of JFK giving his speech about the ambitions of America. We also have one of my favourite screens in the exhibition, which is just a whole lot of footage of blast-offs. And it's quite interesting watching it. It's very hard to tell what's real and what's a Hollywood feature. It's not until you see Tom Hanks' face that you go, oh, that's not real.
And we can hear in the background there one of these films showing, which is reaching its crescendo.
Yes, this is an early Russian film that we have we wanted to highlight as a sort of feature in the exhibition, and this is sort of part of the transition, I think, from the early cinema through to the Race for Space section. But can I take you around to a work? This is a work by Jane and Louise Wilson, who are two contemporary British artists who have a history of working with abandoned, very architecturally significant sites. And this work, Star City, which was made in 2001, is a four-screen video artwork that was filmed at an abandoned section of Star City in just outside Moscow, where the cosmonauts train. And it's an incredibly beautiful installation. You get to see the swimming pool where the cosmonauts train. You get to see their housing, where they get dressed when they're getting ready for a mission. And I think it gives a nice counterpoint to a very sort of particular NASA aesthetic, which I think is what we see on television a lot. There's a very particular aesthetic to the Russian space program, which I think Jane and Louise really sort of bring to the fore. And as a sort of large screen, four screen installation, it gives viewers an opportunity to really be immersed in that environment.
And I'd point out that the screens are not just flat in front of us, but they're actually all around us. So we're like standing in a room, and the four walls of the room are showing these pictures. And at the moment, we're underwater in obviously the weightless training facility at Star City.
Yes, and I think it was interesting. I brought a group of 10-year-olds in here, and I sort of thought, you know, I don't know how they're going to respond to contemporary art as much as some of the other things in the show, and they loved this because it gave them an opportunity, as you say, to feel quite immersed in something that they'd probably seen in books, and it gives you a sense of really being in that swimming pool or being in that changing room, which
yes,
I think
we
is
really cool. Are underwater.
Yeah, which is great.
Well, Sarah, where have we come to you now?
Okay, this is the Live in the Moon section of the exhibition, which is obviously about the landing on the moon. We have worked with the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum in Washington to bring out a camera from the Apollo 12 mission, which we're very excited about. This is one of our sort of rare space flown items in the exhibition. And we put this really in the context of both the Apollo program, but also Australia's role in that. And so we have some really lovely footage, I think, from the film The Dish, which obviously, as many people will know, tells the stories of Australia's involvement in that first mission to the moon. We also have some beautiful photographs that were taken at the Apollo 11 mission of the moon, or actually of the Earth rising, which is a lovely sequences of images, and we have some of the footage taken by those cameras as well. We then sort of enter the orbiting the Earth section, but before we get there, we have some...
I'm interested in the Apollo 12 there. You've got the data acquisition camera,
yes,
which was in the lunar module window,
yes,
and filmed. A lot of people think that the landings were shown live on TV, but they weren't. They were filmed by this data acquisition camera
then,
that you have,
yes,
here, and then later seen on TV,
yeah,
some weeks later when they got back. But the other interesting thing is you have a film canister from the Hasselblad,
yes,
camera, and...
Sorry.
They left most of their film on the moon.
Yes, and it was interesting. There was an interesting story from the curator at the Smithsonian who brought this out, who was saying that it was actually a big problem for NASA that they were using Hasselblads because they really wanted, because they were a government institution, they wanted to use American products. But the scientists and the astronauts were quite upset because Hasselblads made much better cameras than the Americans, and they didn't want to get up there and then things didn't work. So they had to think of quite ingenious ways to kind of convince the authorities that the Hasselblads were actually bought in America. So they had to get people to import them from Germany into America and then import them to sell them to somebody else, and eventually NASA could buy them. But they just were like, you know, our cameras, they're not so good.
Yes.
The Germans make much better cameras. So, yes.
And as I said, they left most of the film from Apollo 12
yes.
on the moon, unfortunately.
Yes, and I think that camera, the video camera we've got, is the only one that came back with any footage, because the others, they pointed at the sun and everything melted and the cameras broke. So, this section here is our, I suppose this is our sort of lounge area in a way. We have a collection of vinyl LPs with a space theme. So we have Doctor Who soundtracks, we have the flight of Apollo 11, Man on the Moon, we have Moog music, we have all sorts of different library records, television shows, Space 1999, Plan 9 from Outer Space. And then we've recorded tracks from those albums, and you can listen to them in our little listening lounge here. And we also have a series of space-themed music videos that you can watch and listen to as well.
The first time I came in here, I was quite surprised at how many of those I have. And not that I collect them, it's just that they just happen to be in my record collection. And so these were all readily available in the shops, and not sort of specialist productions.
Actually, no. My partner is a record collector, and he had about a third we have loaned from him and from two other record collectors, one in Japan and one here. So no, they're not particularly that. You can't just go anywhere and buy them.
Not now, but you could at the time.
You could at the time. Some of the NASA ones, I think, are harder to come by. But yes, we just thought that was a nice way of including that, I suppose, that musical history that links in with the film history in a way.
Yes, as you said, it was a surprise to see it there, and it's a welcome surprise. Very nice.
Yeah, I think people have enjoyed that part of the show.
So we're here now in front of the installation by Soda Jerk, who we had on Southern FM some weeks ago.
Yes, Soda Jerk, as your listeners probably heard from that interview, are a Sydney-based duo that predominantly work with film and I suppose make multi-screen mashups of different films to create a sort of new story. This Astro Black work is really a sort of mashup of the history of hip-hop, the history of science fiction film, and the history of space exploration. And they've woven these two histories together to create a new story. They're very inspired by the Afrofuturism, I suppose, genre, and people like Sun Ra and George Clinton. And this has been a very popular work. I think it's a completely different look at space exploration to what the general mode is. And as you can hear from the music in the background, it's lots of fun. This is really an introduction to the Orbiting the Earth section, which focuses on three really crucial films, which I think really in many ways are the linchpin of this second half of the exhibition, and that's Ridley Scott's Alien, Stanley Kubrick's 2001, and Andrei Tarkovsky's Solaris. So we have objects from those films, we have segments out of those films, and we have, which is very exciting, some material from the Stanley Kubrick archive in London, which includes some letters between Arthur C. Clarke and Stanley Kubrick as they were starting to develop the story and the concept for 2001. And it was obviously a very intense collaborative enterprise that they were undertaking.
Yes, I see here we've got the storyboard.
Yes, these actually, they're Sasco cards, and they're not exactly a storyboard. They were used by the special effects department to, I suppose, storyboard in a way the special effects and the sequence that they would go through in the film. They're incredibly beautiful objects in their own right.
It's interesting to compare how the artist's concept here has evolved into what we actually saw in the film.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're almost exactly the same, and other times they're quite different.
Yes, because, you know, I mean, they evidently went, you know, a lot was lost, a lot was further developed in the final show, but I think it gives you a sense of the kind of depth of research that they went into. Kubrick worked with a lot of different scientific consultants, especially from NASA. I think it was, you know, it's obviously a very well thought out. It's, I suppose, very different from some of the science fiction films that we get today, where there's pretty much a model and they just go ahead and they. Kubrick was really at the beginning of that.
The other interesting thing is that these are all hand painted. Some of them look like montages, whereas today it'll be done on a computer.
Exactly. And I think there's a certain freedom and creativity that you can see from the sort of cut and paste process that they've gone through here.
And down here we have a number of letters.
Yes, these are the letters between Kubrick and Arthur C. Clarke. One of my favourites here is actually not a letter, it's a document called Son of Dr. Strangelove or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Stanley Kubrick by Arthur C. Clarke. It's 3,000 words and it doesn't have a date on it, but yes, I thought that was quite funny. There's also photographic pictures of a news pad and a vision phone and various technologies which were developed for the film, which at the time was seen to be in the distant future. But, you know, the news pad looks exactly like an iPad.
And in the background, of course, we have some of the scenes running on the...
Yes. So we have scenes from 2001, from Solaris over here. Andrei Tarkovsky's film.
Ah, yes. Not many people will have seen that.
Well, yes, I mean, it was hard to...
First of all, it was Russian, so that means most Australians wouldn't have
gone
to see
it. Yes, and there is obviously a recent Hollywood remake with George Clooney in it, which is a really interesting film, but we decided just to show the original Tarkovsky version. Over here in this, across the corridor, we have a work which is inspired by 2001 and Solaris by a German artist, Julian Rosenfeld. This is a four-screen work. It's very different from Jane and Louise's work in that I think it's much more narrative. It's very much about a sort of existential, I suppose, crisis in a way which is similar thematically to films like 2001 and Solaris. And it follows the work shift of one single man, who's the only person who appears in the film. And it's filmed in some really interesting sites in Berlin, in an old library, in an old space program.
Looks like Space Lab. And the other one looks like a power station.
Yes, there's a power station, there's a library. There's a whole lot of different series of sites that Julian has filmed in. And it all comes to a climax which we're actually about to hear at the moment, where the central figure starts playing, I think it's an oboe, and there's a very mournful tune that brings together all the screens together.
Like we got there just at the right moment.
Yes, we got there. I've often talked about that, and that doesn't happen. And if we come in here, we can see.
There's always some fans of Star Trek out there.
Oh yes, no. So here's our Star Trek. We've got a few things from Star Trek. We've got some costumes, but we've also got a screen with some excerpts of different. You can hear the singing in the background, and some models and some early. Cells from animations in the early 70s.
One of the models looks like it's 30 centimetres, the other one looks like it's possibly 60 centimetres long.
Yes, there's some nice models. We also have some... Oh, careful. People trip over them all the time.
Spacesuits.
Yes, so here are some spacesuits, which is a bit of relief, I think, when we've been watching lots of screens to come across these. We have a stage, really, of different space boots from different films. We really designed this based on the film The Right Stuff, which I'm sure some of your audience have seen, where you see the astronauts walking towards you in this very sort of heroic pose. So we've got some spacesuits from Duncan Jones' film Moon, from Total Recall, from... we've got Mr. Spock's spacesuit. We have... what other films have we got? We've got Red Planet, Mission to Mars, and Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Some people are going to love that.
Yes, no, that seems to be a film that people keep on wanting to watch. But yes, I think people have loved these costumes. I actually was talking to somebody who was a Star Trek fan who just said it completely made his day looking at that. So
I noticed that when Rex Walheim, the last shuttle astronaut, as it were, he took a lot of interest in these spacesuits.
Yes, it was interesting talking to Rex when he came here for the opening of the exhibition, hearing him talk about how much those films really had inspired him to be an astronaut, and that, you know, as a little boy watching things like Space 1999 or Star Trek, or had really been part of his dream and part of moulding that dream to become an astronaut. And, you know, it was a lot of hard work, and he had, you know, all these different hurdles that he had to get through to become an astronaut and to go on those missions. But he still really, really enjoyed films and television shows about that. And he didn't seem to have lost any of the kind of idealism or fantasy that those films give us. So, yeah, he loved these. People fall over here all the time, so we're very nervous about, yes, these. This is our final section of the exhibition, Mission to Mars, and we have a screen here which has clips from various films like Avatar, WALL-E, Silent Running, Sunshine and Moon, which all have a very strong environmental theme. And we really wanted this Mission to Mars section to engage with that issue of why we're exploring space, why we continue to develop sciences and technologies to take us out into space. And I think one of the key reasons for that are environmental issues. It's about, you know, what we're doing to our own planet and looking back at our planet and planning better for the future. But it's also about, I think, what some people see as the reality of how much our planet can reasonably cope with, and looking at other options, which is always something that comes up when you hear people from NASA talking about why we continue to do this research. I think Avatar and James Cameron, Avatar's director, are perfect examples of that interest.
Okay, and this is an activity area for children,
Yes,
looks like.
This is a work that we commissioned with Peter Hennessy, who's a Melbourne-based artist who also made some works that you see at the entrance of the exhibition. Peter has made what we've called the Space Laboratory, and it's an opportunity for children and adults to make their own space creatures or their spacecraft. And this has been something which I think we really wanted to bring in, that interactive component that I suppose particularly playing on these environmental themes, that this is something that's everybody's responsibility and everybody's turn to kind of take a part in.
And over there, it looks like an alien garden.
It's actually not an alien garden. It's an earth garden. It's really inspired by films like Silent Running or Sunshine, where there's a beautiful garden. And just, it's sort of our nod to the idea of a sort of extended mission, that when scientists have been thinking about developing extended missions, they need to provide food and oxygen, and one of the ways to do that is to build gardens on spacecraft.
And is that a real garden?
It is a real garden. We worked with one of the gardeners at the Royal Botanic Garden to create a little garden that would potentially survive that experience. Mm.
And over here I see it says On Mars 3D.
Yes, On Mars 3D is a short 3D film that we developed with the Swinburne University Centre for Astrophysics and Supercomputing. It's a short film that takes you on a journey over the Martian landscape in 3D, and it's just an opportunity for audiences to get a sense, I suppose, of the scale and the look and the feel of Mars. We've put on the entrance door to that film a small screen which has some images or some clips from various Hollywood films on Mars. So we get a sense of how Hollywood directors have imagined Mars, and then how scientists and filmmakers working on that edge between science and museum culture, showing how that looks.
So you can make a comparison between the science fiction and
yes,
the reality.
And the reality, yeah.
And the 3D is very effective?
The 3D works really well. I think that it's a useful tool to give people a sense, I suppose, of actually being there, in a way. People seem to have responded very well. That people really enjoy seeing that.
And I see a lady over there giving out glasses to
people. Yes, so there's glasses. We show it comes on every 15 minutes. People can go in and it lasts about 3 to 5 minutes.
Well, perhaps as we move out into the foyer, I noticed as we came in there were several models made of wood.
Okay, they're Peter Hennessy's work, so why don't we go upstairs and have a look at them. So these are three works by Peter Hennessy, who, as I said, is a Melbourne-based artist. It's My Lunar Rover, My Mission Control and My Voyager. And these are scale models of these objects. So the Lunar Rover is obviously the rover that was on the moon. They're made out of wood. What's, I think, interesting about it is Peter Hennessy is an artist who originally was known as a new media artist. He worked with a lot of technology. And he's increasingly sort of started to make things that he's made with his hand. They're very intricate works, but they're also, there's very much the sense that somebody has made them. They look like those kits that, you know, they're like large-scale balsa wood models made out of ply. And I think they really give a sense, one, of that kind of fantasy that people have of kind of making something and the sort of do-it-yourself, I suppose, enthusiasm of going out into space and being an astronaut, that I think is so important to the whole theme. I think the other thing that's nice about them is that Peter is taking objects that we usually only see on the screen and making them objects. He's making them hard things that you can look at, and if they weren't in a museum, you could get in and play with. And I think that's, and he's sort of reversing the process in a way. He's making something solid that we only see on the screen.
And they're full size.
And they're full size. They're great. When Rex Walheim was out here, he walked past this and then he came back and he said, "This is my mission control." He said, "That's exactly what it looks like." So yes. I think that, and my Voyager is hanging in our...
Yes, I was just going to mention, you should look up.
Yeah, if you look up, there's my Voyager, which is hanging over your head. And it's... it's incredibly beautiful. It's a lovely object. It, you know, it's space
and
hardware.
The real one now
is floating
way
off.
Past Pluto.
So, and behind that, you can actually see one of the costumes from Danny Boyle's film, The Sunshine, which is probably the most fabulous of all the costumes we've got on show here. It's a sort of gold mesh suit with the most sort of bulbous, crazy head on it.
And where would be the best place to see the Voyager model?
There's actually lots of different views. I mean, part of it, why we liked hanging it there, was the different aspects you could see it from. You can look up, you can look down. There's even a lovely window around the corner near our Studio One, which gives you another aspect to it. I think what we wanted to do was sort of give a sense of filling this space with this space hardware.
So if people go up to the cinema entry level, they get a good view of the Voyager,
You can
example.
Even see it from looking down if you go up to the SBS studios.
Well, thank you, Sarah, for joining us on the Space Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Pull us alongside, Mr. Sutter.
Aye, aye, sir.
The point. I mean, the concept is valid no matter where it originates. So if you detonate
in 9 seconds,
you could be doing so on the basis of false data.
I have no proof it was false data.
You have no proof it was correct data.
To discuss this matter.
Why don't you have more time?
Because I must detonate in 75 seconds.